Investment Committee for March 12th will come to order. First item on our agenda today is the continuation of the criteria discussion on how to establish criteria for making selected projects from the spreadsheet to real choices. And one of the major agencies that were involved with the collection of information as well as advice with the governor's office on making out the governor's recommendations is the Department of Budget Management and Budget. And they're first on our agenda today, and it might be a shorter presentation than we expected because Liz Connor is not available this morning, and Commissioner has stepped in after notice of 11 o'clock last night. So welcome to the committee, Commissioner, and present as you wish, but we're primarily interested not in specific projects at all, but the procedure of what your agency did to vet the applications that came in by June 15th and what happened thereafter.
Good morning, Madam Chair, and thank you for the opportunity. I always like to pinch hint whenever I can, and hopefully I will do as well as Liz would have done, but probably not. But anyway, so what I'll do is I'm going to go through a list of these factors that we considered because for us, it's changed over time as well. One of the things we try to do at the management budget in this whole process is when we start getting these projects in, is trying to make sure that they meet certain criteria and also accomplish what we want them to do. So there's really four different buckets that I'll talk about, and they're not really, one's not more important than the other. They're just sort of things that you have to consider when you go through the process. The first bucket really talks about the legal requirements for a tax-exempt general obligation bond, and that is the property publicly owned? I mean, clearly the Constitution provides the general obligation bonds are for public-owned facilities. And will it be publicly operated? And if not, then that can bring in some challenges, as you know. Is there a public purpose or use for the project? And is the expense capitalizable so that it meets the qualifications of those things that are capital in nature, not equipment, for example? So those four checklists, the publicly owned, publicly operated, public purpose and use, and capitalizable expense, are the first things that we go through from a legal process to determine whether they qualify for general obligation bonds. Then the next one, we take a look at, this is really more for local projects. So in our local project area, we have a number of items. The first one is, does a project have a 50% non-state match? As you know, we look for that whenever we can. We all have made exceptions to that on occasion, but the general rule is to look. Has that local project been able to come up with this 50% match? And is number two, is a project eligible for funding through an agency statutory program? Because we wanted to make sure that we supported like the local wetlands project or the local roads project. If projects really could be supported through a state process that had a application process, Public Facilities Authority, the water projects, is there a criteria, is there a process? We wanted to support those state-run programs to the extent that we could. So we wanted to make sure that we encouraged local projects to go through a state funding mechanism, a statutory program, if there was one available. Number three, do the project costs appear reasonable to MMB? Well, we know reasonable is sometimes in the eye of the beholder, but we do have to kind of go through, like we do on anything, at management budget and put that lens of, does it make sense and is it reasonable in terms of what the costs appear to be? Number four, does the project have regional or statewide significance? We clearly look to this at times to determine whether a project really is something that's local, only affecting a local community. And even then, though, obviously it may be needed, but we want to make sure we point out those projects that have a regional or statewide significance. And the next one is, does the project leverage federal or state, non-state sources of funding? We want to leverage whatever dollars we can, whether it's from the federal government, obviously, and we're, you know, we were able to leverage hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't have the figure in my head right now. In the governor's bonding proposal, we leveraged, it was a big number, a lot of hundreds of millions of dollars in federal and non-state money, and that's really smart lending because we can really increase the effect of our bonding projects by using that leverage. The other thing is a project shovel ready? Does it involve construction and or renovation, not just pre-design or design? So where is the project? Do they need a pre-design design process, this bonding process, and then next year or 2 years they'll come and ask for the construction? Or is this project been around several times? Have we looked at it? Do we know that it's there? And is it really truly one of these that's ready to go? Because as you know, sometimes these projects are literally ready to go the minute the legislature passes the authorization and we go through the process at MMB. So that's really a critical component as well. Has a project received funding in the past? Is it a phased-in process? Is this phase two of phase three of this long project? Sometimes we, as you know, this committee and the legislature will get engaged in some of these projects that are really, you know, two or three different phases. And we want to make sure that once we buy into that process, I mean, obviously you need to know that going into it. So when we make these decisions, it's important for you, all of you, to decide, are you ready to make that commitment? But we want to make sure, are we really at phase two, and is phase two really something that we support? And does the project have a resolution or support from a governing body? So if it's from a city or a county, has a local city council or the board of commissioners or whatever authority it might be, have they passed a resolution favoring it? We want to make sure that local projects are supported locally, because that obviously is an important factor for us to consider to determine whether they should be included in our list of local projects. So those are the items that we look to. And by the way, Madam Chair, I didn't have the right document with me this morning, but I'll send over this list of items later today to make sure you have it. But those are the factors we look at for local projects. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at state projects, state agency projects, here we have a different set of four factors. Some of them are the same, but we want to make sure that we also ask the same question for state projects. Are the costs reasonable? I mean, clearly that's part of our job at management budget, whether it's a budget proposal or a bonding bill proposal, are the costs reasonable? Number two, does it leverage federal or non-state sources? As you know, many times we're able to leverage federal dollars in some of our state programs. Again, is a project shovel ready? Does it involve construction or renovation? And then lastly, has a project received funding in the past? So one of the things that we want to make sure is that we do finish projects and not leave them hanging. So those are the ways that we sort of go through the process, those three buckets. We go through the processes for projects in general. And then we added one, kind of a different one, a last bucket, to sort of look at projects from an overall policy perspective. And this is from the governor's perspective. And this is why we added the opportunity for local communities to send in comments on the website that we developed, where we provided opportunities for people to submit comments that we looked at. I read them all. They were like 1,600 comments, and they were great, fascinating comments. We didn't score something yes or no if they got comments or not, but we just tried to see what kind of new information and community support that we learned, and it was really illuminating to read those. But in this area, we looked at, does this project improve access to state resources or programs for children and families? Clearly, the governor has a priority for children and families in his budget and in his proposals, and we wanted to make sure that we specifically took a look at that issue. Does this project create more equitable access to state resources and programs? We're always concerned about whether we're providing equal access to all parts of our community across the state, and we want to make sure that there's no barrier, there are no restricted barriers to any group or to people to these projects. Third, does this project demonstrate a critical operational need? Are there unsafe conditions? Are there adverse health impacts for workers? So part of this was to make sure that we could describe to the public the importance of why this project needs to go forward. You'll hear sometimes about, I think Minnesota State sometimes talks about the need to keep facilities safe, warm, and dry, or something like that. I mean, we have a duty in some areas to make sure we have these criteria that we have met. The fourth one is, does it address climate change? Does it include strategies to reduce carbon emissions, maximize renewable energy? We are already seeing the effects of the enormous costs associated with some of the changes, climate change is going on, and I think we're only now learning how the long-term effects of some of these issues are going to affect us, and it's certainly going to affect how we build things or how we construct different projects. So we need to be mindful of, can we build things that will have the resiliency to last throughout what climate changes may be coming, and are we building it in a way to be more sustainable, to use less energy, be more efficient? Those are all issues that we think are important to consider in projects. And the last one, I'm sure you will be appreciative of, and that, does it align with administration priorities? I mean, obviously what we're trying to do at MMB is make sure that these projects that we really approve are something that the governor would support and the lieutenant governor, so that's part of making sure that we do that. So one of the things that we do in going through this process is to make sure that if we have a question, is we track it down, and that's why we have this list. It's more of a checklist to make sure if something isn't there, if there's not a local resolution or a local project, well, we call them up or follow up to make sure, do you have it, or is there some reason you don't? So it's both meant to help us be informed about the projects, but it also helps us to be fair and let the local projects or state projects come to us and get all the information we need so that they don't miss something. And so that's partly what we do. That was pretty fast. I'm so sorry if I went too fast.
Good job.
But I'll send over the list, too.
Representative Jurgens.
How did you know I had a question, Madam Chair?
Jenny put a circle on my paper that said you had a question.
Thank you, Commissioner Franz, for being here today. I was kind of checking with my colleague, Representative Pearson, here, because one of the questions that has come up a few times, I want to know if the governor's office used as part of the criteria, I didn't hear it, but did you coordinate at all or have discussions at all with Department of Labor and Industry regarding the availability of jobs and the skills needed for these projects? Which, is, as you know, varies greatly between the metro and greater Minnesota and different communities where they're already having some difficulty with some of the specific talents needed for construction-type projects. Was that part of the criteria at all?
Madam Chair, Representative, great question. In fact, one of the things, we looked at this from a couple different perspectives. One of them was from our state economists, from a global perspective. As you know, our labor pool is shrinking, and as you mentioned, it's more and more challenging to get people to match up with the job. So we were looking at this proposal in terms of, you know, remember this bonding, if this bonding bill were passed, for example, it would take 2 to 3 to 4 years for all of these bonds to be sold, because we only sell the bonds when the cash is needed as part of the project as it goes along. So it's got sort of a 4 or 5 year period of implementation for these jobs. So part of our support from a global economic point of view was that over time, we don't see the economists that we're looking at, especially today, see a potential slowdown of economic activity in the future, and this might be an opportunity to be counter-cyclical a little bit for those jobs. But we did look at both the demographer's office and the Department of Labor in terms of how do we make sure that we match up, for example, training at Minnesota State facilities and college campuses and community college. How do we match up the training that's going on there so that we have a pipeline for folks? So we were aware of that. There's not, you know, right now we felt like the impetus for these projects was such that we felt that there would be enough support out there, but we will have to monitor that carefully, because one of the things, if we let some of these projects go and there's not an ability to get that talent, we're going to have to come up with a secondary response, and that is make sure that we either get the training out there or we figure out how to match that project with talented people. But that is an ongoing problem, not just for us in state bonding projects, but for the private sector too. So great emphasis to be concerned about.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was struck by your opening question, which is how do we get to the decision, not necessarily what specifically is placed in the basket. And I thought I'd take, I know that I've said way too long, too many things prior to this, so I'll try to make this also very pointed and succinct. First of all, can we receive the text that you just said? And I suspect there was a certain ad hocness in it, and usually that means there's a higher level of quality in what you said than maybe would have not been there had you had a day or two to prepare. So if there's somehow we can get that exactly, because there was some great wisdom in the text you ended up saying, particularly to the point that I want to draw all of our attention to, and that is we have value systems that we have talked about. The commissioner identified a couple of them right at the beginning, very clear ones, and yet I think we cavalierly ignore them. We cavalierly ignore things like, is it state-owned property? Now, generally we ask that question, but we will sometimes get distracted into things that are not necessarily. So we will get distracted into nonprofits that may be really important and fancy and doo-da-doo-da, and the community's very excited about it, but it's a nonprofit that is not then owned by the city or by a governmental agency. And I think that we do ourselves a disservice when we waltz past primary criteria. So one of my points is can we all discipline ourselves to, when we're looking at a list, that we use primary criteria and make sure we all honor them as we go through. Because there is a loss in the final outcome if what we get to has resulted because we ignored primary criteria. Just think what we could all put into the list if we just ignored the issue of that it be a government-owned entity or some sort of entity like that. We could get all kinds of great projects. That's what we use the private sector for, or the nonprofit sector, is to do those things. So I think the differentiation is important, and we get seduced into letting that go. One of the seduction methods, which I don't know if the commissioner vaguely talked about this or not, but it's the advocacy. So I think you all would really agree that if a group goes out and gets Representative Erdahl as their primary advocate and gets him to be here on the committee and speaking for anything or event, that's far more powerful and sways more than I do. I may come with more words loaded up and try to get unloaded from all those words, but there is still a difference in that advocacy choice. Well, if that advocacy choice is why we are making a decision as opposed to objective criteria, objective sets of valuing, then we are still doing a disservice. With all respect to Representative Erdahl, he is not more important than the values of the whole project and projects across the state.
My wife tells me that would
make sense. So I put down, kind of those were three notes that I put down. Is there wisdom in our systems? And are we honoring and receiving that wisdom when we ignore those things that we have said to each other? Because the end result expects that we have put the valuing in first before we started waltzing down the list. Is there a failing if we ignore them? And I think there is a demonstrated failing, and sometimes we have seen projects get funded, at least in my very short term. We're talking about only two terms, and I have seen us do this regularly in some ways, that something dances past primary criteria and ends up being approved because of great advocacy, great presentation, right people that have become cheerleaders for it, which falls into advocacy. So that I'm just cautioning us all that if we are in the issue of valuing, let's be sure that we do that and then honor it. If it doesn't value, set it off the list. The hardest thing that we can do, set something off the list because it didn't hit the values. And then we got to quit telling our locals, well, if you do it just this way, that'll let that thing go through, or the committee might approve it because you did this. No, the value system's there for them to read. It's public. They should know it, and they should adhere to it. So those are just my responses to the chair's original question. And again, I apologize that I ended up with a few extra words this morning. When I got out of bed, I had to get rid of them. So thanks so much for listening.
Commissioner's response?
Madam Chair, I can't top that.
Are there any other questions for Commissioner? He is Representative Erdoff.
That's fine, I don't remember. Thank you, Madam Chair. And the criteria that you've laid out, seems to me most of them would be applied most directly to some of the like local government projects. The larger pots of requests, you know, like PFA and HEPR and local roads and bridges, those types of things, do you use somewhat the same criteria, or do you depend on those entities to develop their list?
Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative, that's an excellent question. I mean, in terms of the PFA, we follow their guidance. I mean, so they have a process, they have criteria, they have the application, and so when they, as you know, they get on a list and they get prioritized, and of course that doesn't mean they're going to get there. They have to make sure that as they go through that process, that they at the very end they get everything signed and sealed and delivered. So that assumes that process will play out according to PFA. So and same thing with the HEPR projects from University of Minnesota, Minnesota State, local roads and bridges programs. We simply decide what we think the amount of funds that need to go into those programs should be at a minimum, and recommend that to you all. But we do not superimpose our judgment on those kind of statewide programs. We feel that's why we want to support those. We feel their people understand them, they know how they work, or if they don't, we want to support them even more. So we really rely on them for that, for their decision making about how they rank projects.
Thank you.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for presenting the different values and criteria that you have when evaluating projects. And I just want to highlight and just want to say thank you for making equitable access one of the top priorities of the administration. And I think that what I'm going to say may, you know, go towards the point that Representative Salk was making, where we have seen that, you know, some of these nonprofits or some of these projects have approached their local units of government to see what can they do to provide a public purpose and have not been heard. And we know that we have a system in place that oftentimes communities who have not traditionally interacted in this sphere of government or this process, they're trying to go through the process and trying to learn and understand everything, but there are barriers for them, whether that's, you know, being able to communicate their wants or their needs to the local units of government, or just having access to their local units of government are being turned away. And so I would challenge and encourage our community members, you know, I do understand the need for the public purpose, but at what point do communities who have been traditionally shut out of the process reach out to local units of government or the state of Minnesota, and we turn them back to? And so I just want to say thank you for making that, you know, one of the priority of the administration when evaluating projects. And I don't know if you can provide details around the point around how do we address projects and how does it impact climate change, and if not, can you forward that to the committee on how do you evaluate projects with regards to those criteria?
Madam Chair, I don't have that in front of me, but I will get that to you about the climate issues and the resiliency issues. I'll get that to you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
On that point, though, can you give us some idea of what the conversation was around what the governor called equity funding?
Yes, Madam Chair and members. So one of the issues that we felt that Representative Lee just mentioned, but in addition to the fact that the access has been uneven to this process around in some communities for capital bonding, but we also included $30 million in general fund cash to support equity programs that came to this committee and made a case that they should be supported based on their criteria, which would be different than some of the criteria I suggested. So the idea was to support capital projects from community-based organizations that are led and serve communities of color and American Indians, as these organizations have not traditionally had access to capital investment programs from the state. So that was the we realized through the process that there were more opportunities that we should provide than we thought were there, and that's why at the end we decided to provide the $30 million in equity bonding for these capital projects from community-based organizations to provide a unique and new opportunity. One of the things that's so unique about this committee is its broad reach and to the state at large, and provide such a great point of contact for people to come and access funds for capital projects, whether it's a local unit of government or a nonprofit. So we felt it was important to put some general fund cash behind that and not just say we support it, but we set aside $30 million because we weren't sure of whether they would qualify for bonding. And in fact, a lot of them would not. And that's why we picked $30 million in general fund money to support those applications. So we would, our goal would be that they would provide, come to this committee or the Senate committee and make their case that they should be included.
And Commissioner, did you have discussion, a general discussion about whether there was a match for that funding?
Madam Chair, we did. We thought that, and then as you know, there are a number of nonprofits that do have that match. They've done local fundraising or have contributors, and they come with some money already accumulated. And we felt like we didn't know enough to make that a determination of yes or no. So we thought that would be important. And clearly, it shows you support of the local community for that nonprofit if they already have their match ready to go for their capital project. But we did not feel at this point that we knew enough to make that a criteria that was yes or no.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, I think you're in a unique position having served in revenue and now MMB, and in the situation that we're in that is changing daily, with large events being canceled, and that'll have a ripple effect with sales tax revenue and other revenue, is the capital budget that was presented appropriate, that was presented several weeks ago, appropriate for the situation that we're in? That's one question, or we may be in. And then secondly, I think there's been a reluctance or maybe a rule of thumb of not having bond sales when the legislature is in session. But what if the legislature was in recess? Would there, you go to the market for a bond sale so things could move quicker?
Madam Chair, Representative, I wondered if I was going to get asked that question this morning. Well, at 10 o'clock or 10:30, I'm not sure. I think it's 10 o'clock, the governor and I are going to release a supplemental budget. And one of the things that we did as part of this process, it was 2 weeks ago today, I believe, that we did the February forecast. And as you may recall, at that time, we noted that the IHS consultants that we used had based their data primarily on early February. And IHS has recently, this week, changed their economic outlook for this year and next. They went from 2.0, you may recall, it was, I think, 2.1%. growth for GDP for 2020. Let me just double check that. And Right. They had projected 2.1% in February for growth, GDP growth in 2020. They now project 1.8%. Uh-huh. That's this week. They also took the 2021 projection from 2%, 2.0% down to 1.8%. So, I mean, obviously, those are just early indications that are changing on a daily basis. So we did decide, and we did decide to stop and say, is it still appropriate to promote this bonding bill, the size of this bonding bill? And we think it is for a couple of reasons. The first, as we talked a little bit earlier about the countercyclical nature of a bonding bill, and we do believe that if, in fact, there is some economic slowdown happens sooner rather than later, that this would fit perfectly within the countercyclical nature of the economy. But we also felt that with the AAA credit rating that we have and the ability to get rates at 1 and 2% now and for these kinds of projects make a lot of sense, because as long as we all agree that these projects are really needed, really important, they will help sustain the growth in Minnesota for the long term. So we did stop and ask ourselves, is this still the right time to do the bonding bill? And we said, we think it is, even though there are challenges ahead. But I didn't answer the second part of your question. We typically sell bonds in August. Doesn't mean we have to sell them in August. The market gets used to certain things over time, and you don't want to surprise the market. But we could sell at different times. I'm not so sure we would, whether the legislature was in session or not. Part of it is a workload factor. It's hard for us to put together a bond sale while we're in session because of the demands of both session and bond preparation is a lot of work. But we could consider different times, and obviously given the current economic situation, we will now base that decision more on market conditions than sort of the regular August sale date. But that's when we typically do it. But I will just say, you know, everything's kind of off the table now. We have to go on a day-by-day basis. We have to respond to things as they change.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A quick follow-up. So my concern was not whether to have the bonding bill, but that it was too small and that we will need a larger construction effort if next week is worse than this week and 2 weeks is worse than next week. And therefore, I think we want to look at more rather than less.
Madam Chair, I've been informed about more rather than less in this committee several times. So we are reviewing what you're doing, and I appreciate your comments.
Yeah. Representative South.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I want to draw attention to something that happened in an exchange between Representative Lee and the commissioner. And it rings back to the 60s and 70s when I grew up and we started having purposeful efforts to try to recognize that we had disadvantaged parts of our community or culture. I just want to put, I guess, a warning up that I find this a little bit like a hot plate that shouldn't be touched, and that is taking something that you know you want to fund, the equity funding thing, and saying, oh, wink, wink, this qualifies, so we're going to put it into the same pot as bonding stuff. Even though it's missing a couple of our key criteria, which may be the issue of government-owned or state-owned and that sort of thing, I would much rather support, and I may be unique in here, and so you can count that you've got one against 300 votes, but I would rather that we had a new place that we actually created in the system that would be long-term credentialed equity funding, like bonding, but separate, so that it has its own very focused criteria by which those funds would be then available. And so I think that we probably should consider something that's different that would create a catharsis of how are we thinking and how are we generating funds and how do we make the funds flow more appropriately to that way. Nobody whines about we've lost the credentials, me particularly, that we've lost our credentials in how we choose bonding, because now we're funding nonprofits. Rather, I think it's like perfectly wonderful that we created a place for nonprofits for purposes of equity, and we need, you know, the collected wisdom of both staff and the legislature here in doing that. But we would be more credentialed in having those two ways rather than trying to, in my version of this after 40, 50 years of sort of living, is that the idea of hiding something in another funding stream just to get it some money often is very short standing and it makes it a little bit weak. So that's an opinion, and I would only offer it in that hopefully we could move toward a more credentialed place for equity activity to take place.
Madam Chair, Representative, well, I do think that in this time of, as we become more aware of these challenges that we have and things that we, areas where we feel like we really haven't been as open and accessible to everyone, I do think we need to think about how we go about doing that. So I take your comments. Well, and we'll think more about, you know, a longer-term structured process. Thank you.
All right, and Commissioner, on that point, if you could, after 10:30 or so, when your business, that business is over, if you could talk with your staff about how we would set up a model for part of the funding from the bonding bill for another fund in the future, that could be part of the language with the bill, for so that it could, we could go forward with something like it has been suggested, because it did come up in both of the small group meetings with the minority and the majority members of this committee, that and what you said at the very beginning about established procedures, established agencies, or the way the money can be applied for. So if they could have a discussion about that with you, and maybe something still can be done.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah.
We've got till April 3rd, you know, to get this bill out.
Thank you.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I actually have two questions, but may I ask them one at a time?
Yes, you may.
I'll parcel them up for you.
Thank you.
So my first question is, can you reasonably expect rates below 2% on bonds, you know, authorized this session? Curious.
Madam Chair, you're really putting me on the spot. You know, we it's really hard to predict the market, obviously, as you know, and I certainly wouldn't have predicted where we would be today. So it appears from everything we see now that, you know, these long-term bond prices or rates are going to stay pretty low for a while. But so I think our feeling is that that's going to happen. But to your point, that's something that we can assess, you know, throughout this session and communicate with you about if things change or if there's any change in the market that we think you should know about as well when you consider your bill. We'll give you that information. But right now we sort of think those expectations seem reasonable, but, you know, I don't know what tomorrow might say. I'm sorry to be kind of that uncertain, but.
Sure. Second question.
Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. And I know it is, it's kind of a hard predict to predict market time right now. My second question is a little more big picture, but considering that we are headed towards more of a deficit type situation in our state next year, can we afford increased debt like this? Or how can we, is my question.
Madam Chair, Representative, I do think that was one of the things that we looked at. If you look at the, you know, we projected on February 27th a $1.5 billion surplus for 20 and 21 and a and continuing surplus into 22 and 23. So we won't do a regular forecast again until November, but we do have an April 10th outlook that we will be putting out. So we'll get an updated economic outlook, and then we'll present that, and we'll release that on April the 10th to give you an update on the revenue that we've received thus far this year and our changes in the economic conditions. So we do believe, though, that the structural balance that we see clearly is something that provides some confidence to us that we have the funds to continue increasing the debt service to some extent. But remember, though, our debt service as a percent of the total personal income in the state of Minnesota continues to decline. So we're on a declining basis over the last 3 or 4 years in terms of the percentage of that for our debt guidelines. So we think that trajectory continues to be favorable. But we do believe, though, that is something we'll have to think about, is that if we get into a different budget balance situation than the surplus we have, we'll have to consider that. But at this point, we do believe that the conditions we currently have in Minnesota do support adding to the debt, the amount for this particular bonding bill. But it's something we'll be monitoring on a regular basis. Your concern is noted.
Madam Chair, just clarification. So it's my understanding, though, that the projection is that we are going to not have a surplus and probably a deficit at a particular time. Is that correct? I thought I heard that, or no?
Madam Chair, no.
No.
We have not changed our forecast of 2 weeks. We're simply indicating that the conditions that surrounded that, the risks continue to grow. So we have not, and it would be way too early for us. Part of the issue we released on the 10th was, I think, Tuesday, a revenue report for the month of February. And that revenue report was down slightly, but that was really due more to people getting income tax refunds earlier, so it was a timing issue. Mm-hmm. So we haven't seen yet the effect of the current economic situation in our revenue stream. Now, you're raising interesting points, and that is, we do expect, I mean, the legislature just passed a 20-some million dollar bill to help with coronavirus issues, so our spending is going up, at least there. But you know, obviously this is going to have revenue effects going forward, but we just don't have the information yet to know what that's going to be. So we haven't changed our forecast yet.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Representative Hansen's gone, but just put out the comment that more is a relative term. Depends on where you start from. But a question that I do have for you, Commissioner, is if we, when you make your announcement today on the supplemental budget, is that where you might include any cash for capital investment, or is that another announcement to come?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, that will be included in the overall supplemental budget. So we've already released the capital budget with the cash requirements. I think it's 50-some million dollars. Well, total. That's around $50 million for this biennium in our current bonding proposal. That will be included in the supplemental budget that we will be releasing today. So it'll be a combination of the capital budget plus any additional expenditures that we're going to make in the supplemental budget. So it'll include everything.
All right. Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. So the money that you have already indicated to be there plus some other may be there. We'll just have to wait and see.
Madam Chair, yes.
Thank you.
But not in the hundreds of millions.
Madam Chair, no, we have not changed the our capital budget or the local projects plan at all at this point. We're waiting for this committee to complete its work and educate us further.
Thank you for that opening. Representative Dean.
So, Madam Chair, members, you know, listening to Representative Salk and Representative Lee and, of course, the Commissioner, and talking about these special areas of money that we allow money for certain types of project. I mean, we kind of already do that, whether it's Bowser, PFA, or other things that within those areas, they prioritize their particular projects. And albeit we kind of do it, but not really through deed, in some ways, those local projects and maybe what Representative Salk is talking about is actually formalizing something a little bit more. I don't know what that would mean to MMB or to deed or to another agency that would then have to go through that process. But it's certainly an opportunity to do that. I think that one of the things I think we always struggle with here is, what does balance mean? Because, you know, we're not just trying to balance throughout the different areas of the state, but the different types of needs, the different types of projects. And we know that one community's need of $2 million is like astronomical. But for that community, that's really, you know, really important. And then we have, you know, projects like the, you know, the bridge in St. Paul, you know, that's $58-60 million. And when you look at the overall budget of the city of St. Paul, that's not as big as that $2 million project might be to a small town. But at the same time, you know, respectfully, that, you know, there might be 800 people in the small town and there's, you know, 400,000 people in St. Paul. So, I mean, I think as we think about those balance, we're trying to balance a lot of different factors. And I think that's always been the challenge of this committee. And I mean that beyond getting to 81 votes. You know, that's a little different kind of balance. But I think overall, I think most chairs and most committees have strived to have something that, you know, a lot of people will be disappointed with, but a lot of people will also be very happy with. So.
Representative Bang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make a couple points made about equity funding. So I do agree that while we are entertain the idea of coming up with a model that for the long term will look at how we can better improve access to communities who haven't traditionally been at the table, I just want to emphasize that these communities also have needs that are great and with great urgency, just like how the communities that we've heard through our tours, through hearings, and because these communities who have not been traditionally at the table, the system was set up really have created limited access for them. And so for so long, when the state has failed to reach these communities, nonprofits or local organizations had to step up. And so this is not something that happened out of thin air. It was designed that way. And so we have to do a better job. We need to do a better job of challenging the system by being more creative at how we can reach these communities. And nonprofits have done a better job at reaching these communities than we have. Specifically in my office, I represent two cities, Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park, that are people of color majority cities. Yet it is of no coincidence that I disproportionately see more of the white counterparts than of the communities of color and immigrant and refugees communities who have never been at the Capitol before. And so even if that we as a state, we serve the entire state, there are still communities who are still left behind. And therefore, as a result, other services and other organizations have to step up to meet the needs of those communities, because the needs still remain, the urgency still remains. And so I just want to emphasize that as while we consider a long-term solution, we must recognize that these communities also have needs that are great that we must also address as well. Thank you.
Commissioner, we've gone way beyond the time that and you've been very patient with us, and we welcome that you're here, and hope in the coming days that you will be available to us.
Anytime.
We are available to you and the people that work with you for advice and guidance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My pleasure to be here. I appreciate your taking time to listen to me. We'll be in touch.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Are we supposed to be somewhere at 10 o'clock or 10:30 for the unveiling?
No, in fact, there'll be a press conference in the reception room, but we're just going to do press only. We're doing a little bit different with terms of the number of people in the room.
So we should have our TVs on.
Yes. I think it's 10. Does anyone know? I should, yeah, 10? Yeah, 10. I should know that. I'm going to be there, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, we won't hold you up any longer.
Right,
thank you so much. Representative Ogumah.
Madam Chair.
March Chip.
So moved. I'd like to move those minutes, Madam Chair.
Representative Ogumah moves the adoption of the minutes March 5th as printed. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Representative Dean, March 10th.
Madam Chair, I move the minutes of March 10th.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Going back to schedule now. Representative Norness, or Representative and Representative Salk, in the parting from the last meeting, I invited the two of you to think about some remarks to make because you didn't speak the other day, and you have both served more than one term on the bonding committee, and you might have some concepts that you want to share with us because you will not be serving on another bonding committee in the future because you've chosen a different pathway to go for the next year. And so this is your big chance. Representative Norness, Representative Dowd, Representative Salk.
Madam Chair.
Representative Norness.
I'll go first.
Thank you.
Will this affect my grade at all?
Your grade
is this a pass
the
or fail?
Top of the scale right now, and so it will not go
don't
down.
Blow it.
I should stop talking then, right?
Just not too long.
Okay. Well, I can guarantee you will not be too long. So I've served on this committee, I think, one other time earlier. So Dan Dorman, I think, was the chair once when I was on the committee, and also Larry House, I think, when I was on the committee. It goes back a ways. And each time it's been a different experience. You know, it doesn't seem to be any one way to do this. And so I'm kind of admiring the chairs when they attempt to get us through this, because it could be much easier if, as the chair, you just call us in one day and say, this is the bill. In a way, that'd be my preference. Because looking at what we're looking at doing, it seems almost impossible. Because there's so many similarities, there's so many good projects, there aren't any real bad ones. So how do you choose? So that's if you're looking for an answer from me on how to get this finished, I don't have one. We all have our hopes that go back to our districts. We have people, not everybody. I've got a few people that don't like some of my projects. Very small, but there are always people that don't agree, you know. So I'm anxious, you know, to finish this. And if we finish early, I will be very amazed. You know, it's always been a goal. And if you can pull that off, there ought to be a reward. Maybe not seeing us every week would be a reward for it. Yeah. So I don't know what to add, except that I of all the committees that I've served on, this seems to be in a way the most challenging. probably also the most beneficial, because you can point to things that we've actually done, you know, and changes we've made. Other committees can't always do that. So, again, I'm here to help get this done, but I don't have any magic way to do that. Just remember, I was just keeping track of my numbers. Not in total, just projects. Because I don't want to go home and say I forgot one. So I'm keeping score on my own behalf. I won't even go through what they are. That wouldn't be fair. Be putting pressure on the chair. I don't want to do that. Okay. So I again, thanks for the opportunity. I tend to be shy. You know, that's my nature. Made a living talking, but I'm basically shy. Figure that out. So anyway, thanks.
Thank you, Representative Arnes, and appreciate it. Yeah. And we're not at the point, as I said on Tuesday, we're not at the point where we're talking numbers at this point. But we are talking processing and understanding. And any chink that helps us work together for the common goal is helpful.
If I can add one more thing, Madam Chair. It's the process that you're doing, I think, is the most thoughtful process that I've ever experienced before. And that makes it difficult for us, I think, too. But you're really, setting a new bar in chairing this committee. So
I thank you for that. And I'm confident that we're going to have a committee bill.
Yeah. We're counting on it.
So am I. Representative Dow, any... Representative Casau.
Oh, what's the difference?
I'm so sorry.
You wish?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I didn't leave until very late last night, and so I'm getting confused in my lack of sleep. But
I really only have one comment. Obviously, you've all had to bear long treatises that I woke up with in the morning. As I disconnect here, which has been a kind of a longer process for me, which gave me lots of time along the way to notice things that I found undone and left for others to do, and this place is full of that. And so I only ask that we bear toward the future more than the past. Any group of thinkers and anybody who leads needs to be thinking about the future. My company would have been drugged into the ground had I been thinking about the way it was done before and the past that led us to where we are. You have to be looking forward. And this group right now is probably at a place where that's a cathartic experience. That's not just, that's a real change of mind, a change of paradigm. It's how do you look to the future? I was struck by Samantha's identification of how we have completely left parts of the state behind. While we run around congratulating each other on how widely spread the projects are across the state, and we think in geography, and we think in both sides of the aisle, and we think in all these other terms, and we just blindly walked past whole large communities in our state. And I think that that's part of changing the paradigm and deciding to look to the future and not being so beholden to the past. I know those of you that are heavy history advocates will find that grating. And to me, that's the absolute beauty of having to look to the future and be bothered that you're no longer looking to the past, because you then have changed and you've become part of leadership to the future. So I offer that. That's after you've heard all of the other stuff from me, which is no hidden thing. I am buried in the need to work as a function of values
not a function of the history. So that's my hope. Thank you.
Thank you so much. There's always wisdom. Representative Constantine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is my third straight term on the capital investment, and I am also retiring.
Did I know that at the time?
I don't know. It would appear not.
Please share with us your thoughts.
Why, thank you, Madam Chair. I think we always need to keep in mind that asset of the state, asset preservation. I always go back to my own home. I don't let things fall apart. And because it becomes more costly and it degrades the value of my house. And so keeping the assets of the state on a routine basis, I believe, is one of our primary functions. And I've mentioned this before, I really think we should be looking at a bonding committee or a bonding bill every year, and 1 year should just be asset preservation going forward. I would also like to express, as Representative Nornes did, I've really appreciated the team type atmosphere in the committee this term. I think you've really gone out of the way to get the input and things, and that's Representative Earl, you are always one of my favorite chairs, too. But I've really appreciated that particular thing where we've had more of an opportunity, I think, as a committee to give our input in. Thank you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And
you retired, too?
No, I'm not retiring. But, you know, a lot of comments about how we could do things and how we should do things and how we can make things better. And there's a lot of merit to those comments. And I often wish that we lived in a world where we could do what we wanted to do here. But we have other other factors that guide us and in some ways make it more difficult. And, of course, we have to look to the past, and we can learn from the past so that we don't repeat those mistakes in the future. As somebody once said, who is more wise than I am. But you know, we need to do the best that we can do to put this together, given the constraints that we are given. And that's the monumental task that we face. Now, I do have one process suggestion that I'd like to make, and that's this. Chair Murphy, you've requested that we submit our priorities to you. I would suggest that our own priorities not be allowed on our sheets. In other words, Representative Nornes, you could not put down your proposals. I couldn't put down my district. We would have to look, you know, more broad beyond our own more provincial projects. So a suggestion for the chair.
Madam Chair, can I ask a question? Could you put my list on your list?
Very quick, Representative Nornes.
Yeah.
Maybe if we worked in pairs to do our little cards. But I didn't get a feeling, an overwhelming feeling of that we were quite ready for the 12 and 10 suggestions that were made the other day. And I only received indication of a few that people were writing. But before we get that, go any further on that at this time, one of the other things that came up is Representative Dean, you spoke on Tuesday about the procedures that you had worked with in the past, and you brought additional information for us today, or you are more prepared to tell us what the procedures are that we might consider?
Yeah, Madam Chair, and hopefully my voice will hold out. I'd pass on to Ms. Nash sort of an evaluation criteria that I had done when we were at the City of Minneapolis that sort of looks at several different categories. And of course, within those categories, then you could give a range of a score, whether it be from 0 to 15 or, 0 to 5, or sort of creates a little bit of a hierarchy around the actual scoring, so that one area might be really, really a critical area, and so that might have a total point of 15 or 25 points, and one criteria might have sort of less of a critical area, so that might be 0 through 5 or 1 through 5. And what we used to do with that body of 33 people is we'd go through a process that we'd grade each of the projects, that were before us. And then, of course, there's an amalgamation of those scores and then sort of an average across that. And, we went through many iterations where some people would say things like, well, we throw out the highest and we throw out the lowest so it doesn't skew, sort of how it is. If someone hates a project, they give it no points, and if someone loves a project, they give it all the points. The hope is that people actually look through it with a lens, and I'm not proposing that, we would do something like this out of the chute real quick with the projects we have. But the whole idea is we could develop a set of criteria that are critical, and we could put some scoring to that, and then each of us could score the projects accordingly. Or we could do it collectively. We could do it, groups of 3 to 5 people as a way of coming up with some type of value. And as I mentioned, when we knew how much money we would have, we would then sort of draw the line where the projects above it would be funded, the projects below it wouldn't be funded. But then that would sort of institute a discussion where individuals may advocate for a project that's above the line, maybe it's not as high a priority, or it's a project that can wait, or something like that, would then move below the line, and vice versa, that projects below the line could ultimately move above the line. But it was a collective conversation. It wasn't just one person saying, okay, this is what it is. I mean, it would require some work, and I don't know if that would be work time within the committee or how we might do something like that. But, it's something I've thought a lot about, being on this committee now my 8th year, as a way of thinking about a different way of doing it, as we've talked about, and I think Representative Nornes mentioned it, this committee does things differently every time they do it. And this would actually just put some type of a system in place. Of course, it wouldn't mean that system would ultimately be it, but I think it gives us a different type of starting point. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further points that anyone wants to make on going forward and working together or separately to give us a base for how we're going to establish our criteria? To make a decision on the projects. Well, if not, we're passing out an activity that was developed last night when we weren't sure if budget management were going to come or not, and we had the extra time, and I thought, well, let's give the committee an activity. Because I as I said before, I didn't think that the Tuesday assignment went over with the gusto that I anticipated we could have. But if you completed your work, I would appreciate receiving it. But then I thought, let's do something non-threatening. And so I developed an activity sheet. We developed an activity sheet with just three choices of priority ranking. The highest rank, your choice of the highest rank, your choice, our choice of secondary rank, and maybe a tertiary rank. One, two, three. And we took the worksheet or the spreadsheet from the other day. We took all the funding away. And so what remains is the projects that have been heard or visited or met the MMD standards on June 15th and have indicated in some way to this committee that the project is alive and well and almost, if not already, shovel ready. And we thought that if members wanted to work together, they could. They wanted to work singly, they can. If you don't wanna, don't do it. But I would like to receive some input via this document on Monday. If there's any questions or further discussion, I will entertain it at this point. Representative Pearson.
The one that's kind of striking to me is PFA. And again, if anytime we can remove the political nature of our political body, I feel like that, at least that categorical is one that maybe we could be relieved from the duties of scoring in this capacity because there is a PFA list, and my preference would just be to go with that PFA list. And I don't know if there's other categoricals that we'd feel comfortable doing that with and removing the work of the committee because the work has already been done in another capacity, or if we do still want to make that a political, it's in my district, and so I'm going to prioritize my project and then score the other ones all very low, which is, I just think fundamentally wrong. I do think that PFA, we all generally agree, I think in this committee, no one's ever argued with the scoring system, and even the commissioner today acknowledges they use the priorities of the PFA as how they're going to rank those projects. So it just, that'd be one categorical that I'd ask a reprieve from doing the exercise in.
Any comments to that? Representative Self?
I agree with Nels on. Excuse me, Chair. I agree with Nels on that, on his point. My only question to him, and he sort of offered it as a sidebar, is which others might fall into the same kind of thinking, and how far would we go with that, the activity of honoring a previous evaluation? I just think that that's a real process. I do think that his point is well taken, and I agree with him that when we have places like PFA, and then the big question is, what else is like the PFA? When we have things like that that already have internally and done self-evaluation, should we just honor that and then do our activity
ex parte to that? Is that the right word?
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, I'm looking over the list of the grants to political subdivisions underneath the PFA section for the point source implementation grants. And while, you know, Representative Pearson makes a very strong comment, I'm noticing that the City of St. Paul and the City of Minneapolis aren't included as those types of projects. South St. Paul is not St. Paul, but I understand that. I understand your point, but, you know, we've talked about this previously today about the issue of balance and what does that mean, and of course, you know, Representative Vang say, you know, we need to rethink the lens on which we talk about balance as well. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't do that, because I know generally they have their own process by which they go through. And if that fund has been set up to fund certain types of projects in the state of Minnesota, I think that's okay. Just as we consider these types of valuations, I mean, I think that's another thing to begin to weigh a little bit. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Can I respond to that specifically? I fully acknowledge that. And again, I think it's more in the spirit of PFA is going to get funding dollars, and we're not competing with Met Council for those funding dollars, but in a way we are, right? And so there's no way to really rank how the same type of utility is brought to the districts that you're talking about and rank that head to head. So I certainly concede the point, and yet I look at that, and I think the committee as a whole understands there's going to be some PFA dollars that go into a bonding bill, and so us determining, because it's going to be about the amount more so than it's going to be about how we're going to rank them. And I just think if we can eliminate some of the political nature of that, and especially in that component, the question was brought up about other categories, and obviously there's HEPR and things like that. And I have seen within my political history up here where HEPR priorities in one district have been, one district's been pushed above another district for political, right, because of political reasons. And so I think it's a good discussion. I think the PFA, though, specifically is one that I've just never heard anyone argue with how they rank things. And again, other than the political decisions that get influenced, which I don't necessarily agree with, even when it's my and believe me, I know we have political influence in my district because the chair of the Senate committee is in my county. So I know that almost seems unfair to neutralize things on this side when it might not shake out that way on the other side. So that was the nature of the request. And again, with acknowledging that Met Council and whatnot isn't really in the mix then in the specific request.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you know, I agree in large part with what Representative Pearson is saying here, but and he's touched upon this as well. Frankly, about 80% of what's in here is already rated by some other entity. And, you know, we run the risk, as has been implied, of rearranging their priorities. Some years ago, there were some, with HEPR, some jumping over of priority projects. And that's, I felt, was wrong. And when I chaired the committee, I stuck with the HEPR priorities the way they had them. And but when you go through this, I mean, with PFA, with roads, with bridges, with other transportation-related projects, with the HEPR, it's, I think, for us to rate them would fly in the face of what is already being done. Now, there are areas that are not in that category, mainly what you would call local government projects. And it may be much more appropriate to look at those projects in that way. But again, I think that most of this has already been rated by some other entity that we have depended upon and trusted their judgment for years.
Further comments? Representative Considine?
Not to continue this, but I'm looking through, and actually, Representative Pearson, I think, yeah, it's a really good idea. But as I'm running down that, I look and see at least one project, then that there's no Senate author. And, you know, is that already been determined that it won't go through then because there's no Senate author? Just a little wrinkle that, yeah, I'm sorry to bring that up because I actually like your idea. And again, the HEPR and things like that that we should probably stick to. But if there's not support for it, then.
But we can't.
Can't, please.
Our responsibility is to get about, to begin the bonding process, and the House of Representatives passes
only
the bill,
okay,
on to the Senate.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
It has to begin in the House of Representatives by the Constitution. So that's our responsibility.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Lehman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before Representative Erdahl spoke, I was going to say the same thing. I really don't want to tread. I mean, Minnesota State knows their campuses. You know, the DNR knows their properties. They've been keeping track of the needs for quite some time, and they've rated those. I think in these cases, what we ought to do is maybe rate, you know, rate each category as to the importance. And then when we have a dollar amount, it's basically how much money is allocated to each one, and then allowing those entities to spread the money according to their prioritization. I wholeheartedly agree that, you know, the local projects aren't rated by anybody but us. But the state properties have a rating system in place, and we don't have enough information. I don't think we have as much information as those entities have. It's more a matter of how much money we're going to. If we give Minnesota State all the money they're asking for HEPR, done. If we give University of Minnesota all the money they've asked for HEPR, done. But if they get less, then they're going to have to figure out who gets what. And that would be my preference as a committee member, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. One of the driving things that we were thinking in creating this activity is getting more knowledge about. We've got all the information, written information possible from our tours and from the people we visited with in the state of Minnesota, and from the people that brought their handouts to us in committee when they presented the bills, and the number of visits that we've met with people that have dropped in our offices and all that kind of thing. But we still need more information before we start talking about dollars, in that each person has to have a reminder of what the project was in their heads so that we can make judgments of going along. And this was a thought of how we could begin that, defining one kind of thing from another kind of thing. If you want to stick with the categories and just do one category or another category, go right ahead and do as much of the individual things as you want, or if you don't want to at all, don't then. But this can help you go through, or you can just take the spreadsheet that you got on Tuesday and think, now, what was that project? Where was that project? Who spoke to us, kind of thing? And get it more clear in your mind. And if you want to work with five people in your availability, do it. And if you want to work all by yourself, do it. But come with more of a educated proposal than you had on Monday last, because we're getting into defining the projects. Even though Monday night we have another meeting with new bills in the 4,000s of people that just have to tell us about the immediate emergency that's coming. And we're going to use the same process that we used at the last 40 bill meeting. Everyone can have one speaker and up to a certain number of minutes, of which I haven't determined at this point in time, because there was another one this morning. You have to hear my bill, please. But there's still some projects that are not part of the mix on the spreadsheet. So, with all that being said, and only Representative Lilly left that's asked to speak, Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm okay if the Chair certainly has the last word. I just want to say that the world is changing, as we all know, so fast, and I certainly respect and enjoy all that we've done as a committee and toured, but I have a bit of fear that the world is changing quickly and that we also have to have a plan B that might be not allowing all this thoughtfulness. It might, you know, the real reality might necessitate that we move quickly in the next few days or weeks. And but I really highly respect all this, and but I'm just, I see things changing quickly. Thank you, Madam Chair.
We know what the individual projects are that we want. We've introduced them. Our names are on the bills. We have the bills before us now, so we have language for the bill. But some of us haven't read the bills. We have the two books, well, the four books, from budget management and budget. The first two books that we got, and then the correction books that we received at a 3 month later period of time. So we have the written, the things in writing now, for the most part, except for those that we will hear on Monday, Tuesday morning. So we can have, the language has been written, but I don't know, and we don't know each other's priorities other than the ones that our names are on individually. And so we've got to become, know those better. So it's a deliberative process of putting them down into a bill. And I need your input. And we need each other's input. Because, as Representative Lilly said, times are changing, and fast. This meeting is adjourned.